It's good to be back. Thanks for letting us get away for a couple of weeks. 2 weeks ago, Sue and I were in Kent, Ohio, at Riverwood Community Chapel. That was a church that Sue and I helped start back in 1991. And they invited us to come back. Sandwiched between 2 weeks was last Sunday, and Sue and I spent the last 2 weeks, 1 week working and 1 week playing. The week of work was hard work. I was writing all of the man-up material that we will do this fall, and Sue was writing all of her women's discipleship material. A common theme in both of them, and they have to do with basically what do we believe as followers of Jesus Christ. And the timing of it, I think, is important because of the days that we live in. Christianity somewhat marginalized these days, so it's I think it's really important to understand what is it that we do believe as Christians. Am I able to articulate it? And if need be, am I even able to defend it? Not so much to be a Bible wonk or have a lot of information in my head, but so that I might live well from the inside out. Living comes from believing. And to believe in a certain way ought to mean we behave in a certain way. So anyway, that's what we were up to. The staff was up to doing some really cool things. Let me go backwards, if I may, to the slide of the 48 hours of prayer. That's coming the last weekend of August. And, you know, our church is about to go through a new season. With the building of the hub for the next gen, I feel like we're on the cusp of really some new days, some really exciting days. And it'd be really easy just to plow through and say, let's go, and forget that Jesus said, you know, without me, you can't do anything. So I'm calling on the church, we are, to spend 48 hours in prayer. And you'll see on the back wall of this room are sheets to sign up. You'll come here. Some of you will come at 2 o'clock in the morning, but we are going to pray for 48 hours straight, ending that time of prayer at the 9:30 downbeat of the worship service on that Sunday. We've created a booklet. You'll pray for an hour, and if you think it's easy, you haven't tried. To pray for an hour is a long time, so we will have a booklet prepared for you that will sort of guide you through that entire hour of prayer. So that's my charge. Starting on August 25th, our 48 hours of prayer will start. And I invite you to sign up and be a part of it so that the entire Trinity body is praying to the Lord to ask his help, ask his strength, ask his protection as we move into a new season, I think a really important season for the life of the church. Okay. I'm in Acts chapter 18. If you have your Father's Word, either on a tablet or in your lap or wherever, you can turn with me to the book of Acts chapter 18. Last week, Ty, thank you, Ty, by the way, for filling in for 2 weeks in a row. Ty did Acts chapter 17, which was Paul's sermon on Mars Hill in Athens. And I was jealous. He got my favorite passage of the entire book of Acts to preach. And he did a really good job with it, reminding us of how our culture can provoke us, can challenge us, and how we need to speak wisely into the culture in which we live, just as Paul did in Athens. I love that story. I'm a student of rhetoric. I'm a student of preaching. And so as far as I'm concerned, that sermon on Mars Hill is a classic. To truly understand Western rhetoric and to understand the roots of Christian preaching, you have to go to Paul's sermon on Mars Hill and you really understand where the very art of communication here in the West gets its roots. Certainly in Greece from Aristotle and his rhetoric, Paul was a learned man, learned from that, and all of his conviction of Jesus Christ and all of his training sort of come to focus as he looks at the culture where he is in Athens and he preaches on Mars Hill. I'm not careful. I'm going to start preaching that sermon, so I'm not. We are in Acts chapter 18 as we continue our series in the book of Acts. Again, I'm calling it ancestry.com because as we study the development, the growth of the church as it moves from Jerusalem west, we are studying our ancestry. Where did we come from? That's why I highlight Paul's sermon on Mars Hill. Where does our preaching in America come from? It comes from that. That's the style. It's not the same style that you'll get way far east, whether it's Buddha or others in the Far East. Our preaching style in the West comes from that. And you hear it again and again and again today. But we're leaving Mars Hill, as much as I don't want to. Acts chapter 18, Paul goes from Athens, I'll show you on a map, to Corinth. You see where Athens is? And then he just crosses, goes just about 50 miles to the west, to the city of Corinth. And as I was reading this passage again and again and again, here's my title. I'm usually not big on titles, but this is the title that jumped out at me today. I am with you. As I was reading the passage before us, which is the first, I think it's 18 verses of Acts 18, as Paul goes to Corinth, a favorite song kept coming into my mind. Now, you know, when I say a favorite song, it's either going to be a Beatles song or a hymn. This time it's a hymn. We normally know the first verse of this hymn and the last verse. The first verse talked about what we were, the last verse, where we're going. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. That's the past. The last verse is the future. Whenever you sing it in church, all of a sudden the voices really start peaking. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun. But no, I wasn't thinking those verses. I was thinking the middle verse, not the past, not the future, but the now. Remember these verses? Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Twas grace that brought me safe this far, and grace will lead me home. You see, on the surface, look around you. Look at everyone around you. On the surface, we look like we're doing just fine in the present. All good. On the surface, as you study the history of the church, and you even study the Apostle Paul, who is sort of the hero of the story, you know? He's the church planter. He's Indiana Jones. Nothing scathes him. It's like all of us on a Sunday morning. You look at the people around you and everything's going great. But you know what? It's not. Through danger, toil, and snares. That's every one of us. Our life is filled with dangers and toils and snares. And if you get to know each other a little bit, if you look a little bit more carefully, as we will look a little more carefully at Paul today, you'll see those dangers, toils, and snares. And if you look even a little bit more carefully, you will see the discouragement and the frustration that life brings. And if you look even a little bit more careful, you might see the grace of God working in a person's life. There's a lot of grace. That we are Christian people, that you are following God's call on your life, doesn't exempt you from the dangers, the toils, and the snares, or the discouragement that comes with it. It does qualify you for the grace of God that you need wherever you are going in life, however you are following Christ in your day-to-day life. And Paul knew that too. You know, one might think, I'm going to go back to Mars Hill just for a moment. One might think that coming off of a high, like Paul did in Athens, preaching maybe the most celebrated, the most famous sermon ever, coming off a high like that, the Apostle Paul, you'd think, would be soaring spiritually and personally. But actually, quite the contrary is true. If you look just a little bit beneath the surface, you will see that the Apostle Paul is experiencing the dangers, the toils, and all of the suffering that comes with life and the discouragement that comes with it as well. You'll see a man that is in desperate need of grace. You know that. Remember where Paul was going? He was going to Corinth. You know that in a number of ways. You'll see it in this passage. But as Paul reflects on his coming to Corinth at the beginning of his letter to the Corinthians, there's what he writes. I came to you in weakness, in fear, and in much trembling. That's the passage we're about to read. How did he come? He came from Athens, where he preached the greatest sermon ever. And he came in what? Weakness, fear, and trembling. Ever since he got the Macedonian call, remember he was in Asia Minor, and he had a vision, and a man from Macedonia, from that part of Greece, said, come over here, please. We need the gospel. And ever since he said yes to the Macedonian call, he's experienced nothing but trouble. And so in our passage, I'll read it to you. In verse 9, in the middle of his coming to Corinth, it says, the Lord said to Paul in a night vision, don't be afraid. Keep on speaking. Don't be silent. I am with you. No one's going to lay a hand on you. I have many people in this city. And so Paul now heads down to Corinth. And it's easy to see just the geography, to see the pioneer, to see the Indiana Jones going to the next station, like he's on some sort of tour of the Holy Land. And we did Athens, and now we go to Corinth, and awesome. Make sure you eat the baklava. It's really good. He goes to Corinth. He leaves Athens, which is the philosophical and cultural center of Greece, and he goes to Corinth, which is the materialistic and the hedonistic capital of Greece. In Athens, the intellectuals and the philosophers would all descend on the Areopagus to get a little bit more knowledge and a little bit more wisdom. In Corinth, every night, 1,000 temple prostitutes who were the victims of the cult of Aphrodite, a thousand prostitutes would ascend on the Agora Corinth, the place there, so that the multitudes could come and celebrate their narcissism and their debauchery of lust, in all in the name of worshiping Aphrodite. That's where Paul was going. Isn't it interesting, though, that the Christian message that Christ himself addresses both the intellectuals of Athens and the lustful of Corinth. Christianity speaks to both of those things. And on the surface, it looks like Paul is just going west from Athens to Corinth. But when you look more closely, you see a man that's in the season of discouragement, a man in need of Christ's presence and Christ's grace. Because through many dangers, toils, and snares, he has already come. Eventually in our story, he will hear the Lord tell him, "Don't be afraid. Keep on speaking. Don't be silent. For I am with you, and no one will lay a hand on you. I have many people in this city." Okay, let's walk through this narrative and just make some observations if we can. I want to highlight a few things as we look at this. So verse 1, we looked at that already. After this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth, where he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla. You're going to hear that name if you read your New Testament. That couple again and again and again. Aquila and Priscilla. The reason they left Italy, Rome, was because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. Isn't it interesting? Anti-Semitism has been a European thing for quite a long time. And now all the Jews are ordered out of Rome. So Paul came to them. He came to Aquila and Priscilla. Since they were of the same occupation, they were both tent makers. Literally, that's what they made. They worked with leather and they made tents. Paul stayed with them, and I think this is an interesting way he puts it. And he worked. Hang on to that one. Paul reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath, every Saturday, and tried to persuade both the Jews and the Greeks. Okay, let's move on. Verse 5. When Silas and Timothy arrived from Macedonia, remember those two? Those two were Paul's missionary partners that he left further north when all of the trouble in Thessalonica was going on. He had to quickly get out of town and go to Athens, and he left those two there. Now they show up, his good partners, his missionary partners show up. When Silas and Timothy arrived from Macedonia, catch this phrase again. Paul, literally the Greek would say, laboriously devoted himself to preaching the word. I just think that's interesting. Luke stops for a minute when Paul's meeting of Aquila and Priscilla and says, and Paul worked. His missionary partners finally show up from Macedonia, and Luke emphasizes Paul laboriously devoted himself to his work, to preaching. And that's why I just gave that little phrase, "I'm busy." When life gets hard, when dangers, toils, and snares begin to bite at you, begin to discourage you. Some of us, not all of us, but some of us, you know what we do? We get busy. It's a common response when life gets really troubling. I don't want to have to deal with that stuff. Most of it's internal stuff. I'll just get busy. I'll just work harder. You do that? It's a common defense to just anesthetize from the dangers, the toils, and the snares of life, to just ignore them. And in the busyness, in the discouragement, it's sometimes really easy to miss the good things, the divine appointments, the relationships. And I mention it because we could have just flown right over it. It would be easy to miss. Let's just emphasize Paul worked. And let's forget Aquila and Priscilla, whom Paul meets. They will become his lifelong friends, his lifelong ministry partners. You'll hear about them again and again and again. You'll hear them at the end of the book of Romans because they were one of the couple that housed the house church of Rome. And Paul will even say about them, they risked their necks for me. Wow. But all we hear and hear, Paul worked. I'm busy. Oh, here's a nice couple. I'm busy. And it's easy to just sort of gloss over Silas and Timothy as well. A reuniting of a ministry team. A reuniting of a missions team. And here they come to reunite. Did they celebrate? Who knows? All it says is Paul laboriously devoted himself to his work. We don't hear anything about the report that Silas and Timothy gave. We read about it in 1 Thessalonians 3, where they came and they told Paul, you know that church that we started in Thessalonica? They're doing really, really well. They are devoted in their faith and in their love. It's wonderful. Don't hear anything about that. We don't hear anything about what we hear in Philippians and in 2 Corinthians, that they actually came with money. The Philippians took an offering for Paul to give him money to help him with his ministry. You don't hear anything about that. All you hear is Paul laboriously devoted himself to his work. It's really easy to miss the good things, the divine appointments that are going on when I'm trying to cover up the discouragement that comes from the dangers, the toils, and the snares of life. It's even easy to miss the fruit of one's life and just plow forward. Verse 5 says, Silas and Timothy arrived from Macedonia. Paul laboriously devoted himself to preaching the word, testified to the Jews that Jesus is the Messiah. When they resisted and blasphemed, notice Paul's response. First time he responds like this, and I'll just observe, maybe his fuse is getting a little short. I don't know. When they resisted and blasphemed, Paul shook out his clothes and he told them, your blood's on your heads. I'm innocent. From now on, I'll go to the Gentiles. So he left there and he went to the house of a man named Titius Justus, a worshiper of God. I love this, whose house was right next door to the synagogue. He didn't go far, he just went next door. I'm not preaching to the Jews anymore. Yes, you are. You're just right next door. As a matter of fact, look at verse 8. Crispus, who was the leader of the synagogue, he was the rabbi, the chief rabbi of the synagogue that Paul just left. Paul seemed to have a conversation with him. Crispus, the leader of the synagogue, believed in the Lord. Huh? Yeah. The rabbi of that synagogue came to faith in Jesus. Believed in the Lord along with his whole household. And many of the Corinthians, when they heard, believed and were baptized. Whoa! It's easy to forget all that. It's easy just to say, I'm just working hard. I'm just making my to-do list a little bit longer. I'm going to get on my hamster's wheel and keep running and keep running and keep running. Watch me multitask. You do that? I think I have a tendency of doing that. I remember early on in ministry, Sue and I were in Akron. Sue got very ill. And she was in the hospital. And we had a baby that was delivered way too early. The baby ended up in the neonatal unit at Akron Children's Hospital. Baby actually didn't make it. I've got a wife that's in the hospital in Warren, a baby that's in the neonatal unit in Akron. I'm trying to visit both of them, but I'm also trying to work really hard. I still remember his name was Norv. The V, good guy. He was our children's pastor. One day he came in, he saw that the light was on in my office, and he came in and said, what are you doing here? I said, I work here. He said, I know, but what are you doing here? You have a wife in the hospital, and you have a baby in a neonatal. What are you doing here? I guess I'm just keeping busy. I guess I'm just trying to anesthetize from the dangers, the toils, and the snares of life. That's what Paul was doing. It's easy to do that, isn't it? Verse 8 ends so positively. Many of the Corinthians, when they heard, they believed and they were baptized. It should be, whoa! But notice this weird sort of contrast. Verse 9, it's what I've read to you already twice. The Lord said to Paul in a night vision, don't be afraid, keep on speaking. Huh? It's as if Paul is saying, I just need to keep busy. I just need to stay on task. Don't need to dwell on the troubles and the snares. I just got to keep plowing and check off my to-do list. Got to keep going. That's verse 8. Keep going. Verse 9. Christ sees right through Paul's busyness and yours and mine, right to his heart. Similar to Elijah, by the way. Remember the story of Elijah in the Old Testament? The Lord comes right to Elijah. What's the matter with you? Christ comes right to Paul's heart and he brings him grace and he brings him comfort. And he comes to him in a night vision. So I'm going to go from I'm busy to I'm down. That's a healthier statement. It's also a Beatles song. I don't know if you knew that. I'm down, I'm really down. That's the way the song goes. Down on the ground. Okay, so all of this is going on. Paul is laboriously devoting himself, even seeing some fruit in his work. And then the Lord comes to him and says, don't be afraid. Keep on speaking and don't be silent, for I am with you. And no one will lay a hand on you, because I have many people in this city. And then Luke says, Paul stayed there a year and a half, teaching the word of God among them. When I'm down because of the toils, and the dangers, and the snares, these words are really good. Here's the way I summarize them. Don't be afraid. Don't fear. It's understandable. Despite the positives, you met a couple you're going to be with the rest of your life. Your ministry partners are back. They brought you money and they brought you encouragement. Now, don't fear. Because like Pavlov's dog, Paul has seen this pattern before. He goes in, he proclaims Christ to the Jews in the synagogue. They reject it. They start trouble. Then a notable person gets converted, and here comes the trouble. Fear? Heck yeah. What's next? A riot? Maybe I'll be in jail. Maybe I'll be beaten by an inch of my life again. Fear? Yeah. Why does Jesus say don't fear? Because Paul, Indiana Jones, is shaking in his boots. He's even fearing success at this point, because if he succeeds like he has in Philippi and Thessalonica, look out. Better duck, Paul. It's going to hurt again. We're really good at anticipating failures, aren't we? Even though they might not be there. Not that long ago, I was talking to a young lady who I want to say maybe 7-8 years ago went through divorce. And if ever there was an innocent party in a divorce, she was. And I said, how are you doing? And she said, I'm doing okay. She said, I think I met somebody. I said, oh, really? Tell me about him. And she told me about him. And it sounded like a pretty healthy situation. And she said, I'm scared to death. Why? She remembers. Like Pavlov's dog, she remembers the pain. It's easy to anticipate failure and trouble. Can't tell you how many pastors I talked to. I'm thinking of one man specifically. He is now a chaplain. He pastored two or three churches, and every church he went to, they beat the crap out of him. Really? Maybe the next one will be better. I remember him saying that when he got to his third church, maybe three was a charm. It was a painful charm. Jesus comes and says, don't fear. Christ comes with his comfort and his love. Don't ever forget that perfect love casts out fear. In the midst of our discouragement, in the midst of the dangers, the toils, and all of the stresses of life, the snares, Christ comes and says, don't fear. And he doesn't just use words. Perfect love casts out fear. Don't fear. The second thing he says is don't quit. Keep on speaking and don't be silent. Isn't that interesting? Keep doing what you're doing. Yeah, but every time I do it, I get thrown in jail or get the crap beat out of me. Don't quit. You could almost hear him say, why bother? You ever skip the opportunity to do the right thing? Because the last time you did, you got burned again and again and again. I was thinking of this yesterday on the plane, which is where I was thinking through a lot of these details last night. I used to, on the plane, readily tell the person sitting next to me, I'm a pastor. I didn't go so well. Sort of like saying, I have malaria. Let me sneeze on you. So now I say things like, well, I'm on the board of an organization that helps the marginalized in India. Easier. Don't stop speaking. Don't miss the opportunity. Don't quit. Last time you were generous, you got slapped in the face. Be generous again. You've heard this, I'm sure. On the wall of the children's home in Calcutta, Mother Teresa's Anyway, people are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you'll win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and your God. It was never between you and them anyway. Don't quit. The third bit of advice the Lord gives to the discouraged Paul is, you're not alone. See it there? For I am with you, and no one will lay a hand on you or hurt you. By the way, they didn't. For a year and a half, this promise just applies to Corinth. But for a year and a half, they never heard him. I am with you. You know how you could summarize Christianity? God is with you. It's not just a philosophical system. It's just not a bunch of ideas to follow. It's not just some pie-in-the-sky hope for the future. It is God with you. And so we love to quote the 23rd Psalm. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Because you are with me. When he sent his disciples out, and it applies to us too. I am with you always to the end of the age. You'll name that child Jesus, but you'll also give him the nickname Emmanuel, which means God with us. Don't ever forget, you're not alone. In whatever's discouraging you, whatever danger, trouble, or toil you've got, Christ is with you, even to the end of the age. Don't ever, ever forget that. Don't fear, don't quit, you're not alone. And then finally, it's not in vain. Boy, you got to hear that, especially if you're a doer, if you're a worker. It's not in vain. How does the Lord put it? I have many people in this city. In this city? With the temple of Aphrodite? In this city? With all of its heat in it? In this city? These people? Yep. Some people's lives here are such a mess. Some consciences here are so guilty. Some people here are so bored with the narcissism that they're ready to receive Christ. And you're my vehicle to get it done. It's not in vain. And so for a year and a half, the Apostle Paul stays in Corinth with all of the headaches that that church would bring him. Ever notice that, by the way? Sometimes we spend an inordinate amount of time with the problem child. Spend an inordinate amount of time with the problem child anyway. For a year and a half, it's not in vain. Don't be afraid, but keep on speaking and don't be silent, for I am with you. And no one will lay a hand on you or hurt you, because I have many people in this city. It's not in vain. Some of us today are discouraged. Some of us are today wondering, why should I even bother with tomorrow? Some of us are wondering, is it really, really worth it? For all of us, I wrote this on the plane yesterday. Let me paraphrase Christ's message to Paul, to each one of us, and then I'm done. Hey, you. I see you there looking busy, looking tired, looking worried. Don't be afraid. Please stop anticipating the worst. Keep your eyes on me. I love you. I will be with you always. Keep going. Keep serving. Keep telling others about me. Count on my presence. Trust in my protection. Believe in my promise that by my grace, your life will bear good fruit. And know that through many dangers, toils, and snares, my grace will sustain you now and will eventually lead you home. I am with you always. Would you pray with me, please? Father, thank you for the church that has grown for 2,000 years, but not just by some Indiana Jones, but through many dangers, toils, and snares of the many, of all of us. And so, Father, I pray for each of us this morning who need to hear the words, don't be afraid and don't quit. May we hear it from you, that as we go through the dangers, the toils, and snares, may we know your grace for today, and your grace that will lead us home. Thank you for your faithfulness. Remind us of that again today. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.